Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello, and happy 2023. Welcome to the first podcast of the year of the Architects of Destination Advocacy. So first off, just wanted to do, I hope everyone had a good holiday, safe and well, and sort of wanted to outline to start the podcast before we get onto our conversation, just to sort of outline all the things that are happening with Destinations International for the full year of 2023, and that starts with our events. If you haven't checked out recently, go to our website. We have released all our upcoming events for the calendar of 2023, but I just want to do a special and small little shout out for each of those events so you know what's upcoming if something actually might be occurring in your area. First up, actually in the beginning of February in Norfolk, Virginia, where we're having our Marketing and Communications Summit. Followed by that, the next month in March, in conjunction with PCMA, is going to be our Business Events Industry Week. Now, that is a big week because in addition to having Spring CDME as part of it, we're also going to have Destination Showcase and the Convention Sales and Services Summit. This all takes place March 4th through the 7th, 8th, and 9th in National Harbor, Maryland. After that, the next month in April, find us at CEO Summit, this time in Greater Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, which is the April 3rd through the 5th. Going on to that, it's the big show, obviously. It's going to be annual convention. Of course, with every annual convention, we also have a preceding CDME courses with it. So all that's taking place in Dallas, Texas. CDME beginning the 15th, with annual convention beginning right after that, July 18th through the 20th. Again, now we get to some of my favorite summits, including Advocacy Summit, but I actually have a new one in addition to this. So first off, it's going to be our fall CDME courses, which takes place in conjunction with two other brand new summits that I want to point out, all happening in Little Rock. The first is going to be our Business Operations Summit, in conjunction also with our first EDI Summit. These will all take place with a little bit of overlap with, our, of course, our Advocacy Summit. And this is all taking place October 7th, with CDME starting that Saturday, concluding all the way on the Thursday of October 12th. So all full details are on our website. I encourage you, not only if it's an area that's in proximity to you, but are looking to attend one of our events the first time, this is a great year to be getting off, especially with a couple of new summits being added back are being revamped, like our Business Operations Summit, or a brand new summit being our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Summit. So with that, let's actually get on to the show. So for 2022, for many of us, we could kind of call that the next normal year through our progression of the pandemic timeline. We really still are all in with the return of events, holiday gatherings, social events, and other really pre-pandemic activities. Some might even call it normal again. But with that, we've also seen some major societal norms shift as well. And one I would argue being the biggest shift and potential winner of 2022 is the adoption of cannabis and hemp through both policy, legislation, and social intersections. I'm calling it a green wave, one could say. Of course, this has many intersections with our sector and the role a destination organization can play, and that it's going to be the heart of today's conversation with our two guests. I hope that after our show today, you feel both more informed on what is happening in the world of cannabis and hemp, but also inspired and in how you can engage in your community on this topic. With that, please welcome Brian Applegarth, founder of the Cannabis Travel Associations International, and Racine Freedy, president and CEO of Glacier Country Tourism Montana. Brian and Racine, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Andreas. Thanks for having me. Hi, Racine.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Andreas. It's great to see you guys.
Yep. And I think hopefully this is one of the funnest conversations we get to have on the podcast. Now, just a little small brief introductions for our audience. I wanted to ask Brian if you wouldn't mind just doing a little introduction to yourself and the industry and the Cannabis Travel Association, as well as you, Racine. So Brian, if you wouldn't mind going first.
Happy to. Yeah. So Brian Applegarth here. Thank you for having me on the show, Andreas. So I've been working in cannabis travel and tourism and hemp travel and tourism since 2013. And the Cannabis Travel Association International was established in 2017, just before legalization, adult use recreational legalization for cannabis went live in California. Some of my other work includes the Cannabis Trail, which is a 9-county trail that is a cultural heritage trail in Northern California that honors the cannabis legalization movement. And I work as a consultant with destinations to make sense of and to integrate cannabis and hemp travel strategies. So very excited about this from the visitor economy point of view, but also the destination development point of view. Lots of opportunity with cannabis and hemp.
And Racine?
Thanks. Glacier Country Tourism is actually one of 6 tourism regions in the state of Montana. And we're located in Northwest Montana. We have 75 communities in 8 counties. Our DMO has been around since 1987, of course, focusing on destination marketing for a long time, but we're really proud of the evolution that we've been following the last several years. And just this last year, we have transitioned into a destination stewardship organization. So now we are focused on the resident quality of life and how to balance that with the visitor quality of experience. And so with that comes a lot of new directions for what we're doing, and especially how we're approaching cannabis tourism.
Thank you, Christine. Obviously, thank you both for being on the show. And that's really, we wanted to talk extensively sort of about the intersection of, I would say, a major societal norm starting to shift, especially here domestically with cannabis and hemp, and how destination organizations can relate to it. Just to back up briefly for the audience, you know, myself and Jack Johnson have really been following this topic for a couple number of years. And I want to say, and I feel firmly that 2022 was really a tipping point, especially domestically here in the United States, on cannabis legislation, hemp legislation, and honestly, perception around it. Particularly, I think the apex was happening with our midterms. I did want to ask Brian, since this is sort of your wheelhouse first, just to give, you can get a little bit of update, just sort of the landscape of cannabis and hemp from what concluded in 2022.
Yeah, happy to. Well, first let's tackle hemp. So, you know, really industrial hemp should be thought of as an own global industry in its own right. And it's legal at the federal level in the United States and in many other countries. So the ability to, you know, ship and mail CBD products or sustainable hemp products is fully legal and compliant. And you see this manifesting in the travel economy with CBD massages and different experiences that are usually very wellness and well-being focused. Industrial hemp, actually, the United Nations just released a report that has some amazing information and data around the capacity of hemp to be a vehicle to reach the 2030 goals of the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN. So that was a very exciting thing that came out just this past week. So on the flip side of the coin, you have cannabis, which is actually the same plant as hemp. It just has a slight different composition, and it has those altering molecules that people associate with cannabis often. And as far as the landscape, today we have 21 states that have adult use recreational legal cannabis landscapes. So that's a fully functioning industry. It's based around commercial cannabis activity. There's typically a department that regulates this, and it is a booming space. Some of the more mature markets are really starting to come alive with cannabis lounges and cannabis wellness centers and consumption spaces. The ones that are a bit younger are just starting their first cannabis adult use recreational retail sales, like New York and Connecticut actually goes live today. There are only 3 states in the United States that do not have legal cannabis. So just kind of let that sink in for a second. The rest of the states are all medically legal because cannabis is medicine, and there are legal laws, and medical cannabis travel is very much a thing and real. The 3 states that have no public use of any kind, medical or recreational, is Idaho, Kansas, and Nebraska. A couple of the big wins last year were Missouri and Maryland, which now have adult use recreational. North Dakota, South Dakota, and Arkansas did not vote in recreational cannabis, but they all do have medically legal cannabis landscapes. In 2023, there are 3 states that are expected to launch medical cannabis sales. And those are Alabama, Mississippi, and Kentucky. And then some other information happening currently is Rhode Island and New York. They kicked off sales in December 2022, just recently. Like I mentioned prior, Connecticut just launched sales today for any adult 21 and up. And then Maryland starts adult use recreational sales on July 1. And Missouri is also seeing forward movement and planning on voting in, also voted in legalized recreational cannabis this past November. By the end of 2023, a few more states could be added. Oklahoma, there's a vote in March. And also the Ohio state legislature is considering a bill to legalize use and sale of recreational cannabis. Now, states to watch in the year ahead include Minnesota, Delaware, Kansas, and North Carolina. We could see a forward movement on all those fronts. So definitely legalization continues to roll out. And with it, you know, opportunity, whether that's in hemp or cannabis and across the board, destination development or the visitor economy.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian. It's just to hear the map. And we can firmly say, you know, majority of, especially domestically, there's some type of, you said medical cannabis that's been passed. And now we're nearing almost half the states domestically for almost recreational legalization. Mm-hmm. Just for the audience, I'm located in Maryland, Bryan, California, Racine in Montana. So my state most recently just surpassed it that we're excited about. But to tie this, you know, sort of to you, Racine, one of the things that really struck us when we look on the policy side was cannabis legislation, cannabis and hemp, was not firmly, I guess the stereotype of being, you know, blue states or Democratic states that actually we're seeing across both left and right, you know, Democrat and Republican. And, you know, I will say my own misconceptions, I did not initially peg Montana as a, you know, cannabis, I'd say the word hotspot, but an epicenter of sort of it happening. And I wanted to kind of hear from you, the journey of your destination, your destinarization of how cannabis and hemp started to really flourish and begin in your community and its adoption and how you've intersected with it, with your role with the destination organization.
Yeah, I have to admit, I kind of agree that I think most people perceive Montana the same way. But there's one thing about Montana that we're pretty unique at is that we have kind of a radical live and let live mentality here. And so we do kind of buck the norm along many different areas of interest. And of course, marijuana has been a part of that. All of our marijuana journey, whether it's medical or adult use recreation, has all been by citizen initiative. So back in 2004, the citizens created an initiative that legalized medical marijuana. And there weren't a whole lot of sideboards around it at that time. And so there were probably a lot more problems than there should have been. So our legislature stepped in and kind of retooled things and made it so it was much, much more difficult to access for different patients and clients. But in 2016, again, our citizens stepped up and they basically created legislation that removed most of the harmful aspects of that legislation. And then in 2020, they came together and they got it on the ballot so that we could legalize adult use marijuana. And I believe it was 68%, 69% of the voters voted in favor of that. Now, it's been interesting. It's not legal to buy in all counties. In Montana, you had to have a majority of the voters in your county vote to legalize it, which made that county a green county. So you could both buy and sell. And then use. If you are a red county, you can certainly still use it. You just can't buy it there. So, and of course, there's some new legislation. They're tweaking it again as we move forward. But when we looked at that, we focus on the responsible use aspect of it. Since 2021, we've been looking at responsible recreation. And of course, when you bring something new like this into the mix, it's really about education and outreach. And of course, our audience is everyone. And so we just kind of stepped up and took the opportunity to figure out how we can help people understand what's legal, what isn't, how you can use, how you can't. And then we want them to have a good experience while here. We don't want them to get in trouble.
Absolutely. And just for the audience to understand a little more of the live and let live philosophy, my state does not currently have the ability for citizens to reject laws or legislation. Would you mind explaining just a little bit what that is? And it's very unique to your state?
Sure. Yeah. The citizens actually have the ability following signatures and everything else, but they can actually get laws created. They can repeal laws or change laws. And so it's pretty interesting. So if there's something that the legislature implements that they don't like or want to alter, they just have to go through the citizen initiative process in Montana, and they can get that changed. And that means that the legislature then has to work within that initiative. So we have a lot of citizen initiatives that are usually on our ballot.
When you, as part of your realm and role, how did you sort of see your, Glacier Country playing a part of this when you saw this, okay, this is going to pass? What did you sort of see your role at the onset thinking like, okay, cannabis and hemp is coming. What should we do? Where do we start with this?
Well, we were watching other states as they were kind of moving forward. And of course, you hear people talking about, the rumors and, oh, you can't, this is legal or that's not legal. And we went, we got to get out ahead of this. We want to make sure that both residents and non-residents understand what that looks like and how they can properly and legally purchase and utilize or use marijuana. So, we just put out information in both our travel guide and our webpage, and our call center is certainly available to help people better understand it. But we just felt like it was a natural part of our ability to help communicate to the visitors.
And I think the information sharing aspect is so vital to this topic because there seems to be always a huge amount of misconceptions or even detractors around it. And that's something I wanted to tie back to you, Brian, as I know you see this, not say see this regularly, but you part of your work is to help reframe the distraction or misconceptions and detractions from it. Wanted to know if you just kind of go into a little bit just about, where you see common pitfalls where people get stuck on how they have seen cannabis and hemp in their own, their mindset or bias around it.
Yeah, happy to. And I also want to quickly applaud just Racine and what they've done in Montana by taking a proactive role and feeling a sense of ability and even responsibility to provide good information, because part of the exciting part about today's regulated legal cannabis industry is safe tested products. So you know what you're purchasing and you know the efficacy behind it. And that just drives safety, whether it's for a resident or for a visitor, and delivering that kind of communication to support the legal market is important. So as far as the misconceptions and detractors, I'd say the one that's going to be a continual kind of effort in the years ahead is just combating the kind of reefer madness stigma. And the I would say misinformation that has been part of the landscape since Prohibition in 1937. And part of that is just education with facts and science and case studies, understanding that cannabis was sold over the shelves in pharmacies throughout the United States and other places prior to Prohibition in 1937, that it was once part of the U.S. pharmacopoeia and listed as a treatment for literally hundreds of ailments. And there's this long relationship of coevolution with the cannabis and hemp plant and the human species to a point where we developed an internal system, us and every animal on earth, called the endocannabinoid system, that is a fully functioning system in our bodies that the receptors work in a very close way and communicate with the therapeutic compounds of cannabis. And the primary function of this system is to bring your body back into optimal balance, otherwise known as homeostasis. So when you see cannabis as a treatment that helps bring you back to kind of an equilibrium or an optimal balance, whether it's stimulating appetite for those that need to eat, or whether it's a calming effect for those that need that as a treatment, cannabis is an ancient medicine plant in many ways, and you find it throughout all these cultures. And as people who love travel and culture, looking to ancient China and Egypt and India and the journey of cannabis as a renewable resource and in some cultures a sacrament, it's a really fascinating space to dig into from kind of a fact-based education and science-driven and biology-driven point of view. And that's how you overcome that reefer madness kind of stigma that lingers from that war on drugs mentality. And it's great because there's all this amazing research coming out now around what is cannabis. And at the end of the day, cannabis and hemp both, I believe, represent well-being and really are a reflection of their core principle of stewarding that optimal balance, that homeostasis that they do with our endocannabinoid systems. Important to travel is understanding that there's an audience. And that study that I collaborated on with MMGY Travel Intelligence in 2020, and there was a pulse study done in 2022, you know, the audience has grown by 8%. You know, it's now 37% of the active leisure travel audience in the United States are motivated by accessing cannabis and hemp experiences as part of their destination experience. So understanding kind of today's research from a visitor economy lens, as well as a destination development lens. You know, when you look at this dry county, wet county landscape, you could even look to traditional models like Lynchburg, Tennessee, a dry county that manufactures alcohol. And that is an attraction in travel. So looking at the whole supply chain of what is possible as far as licensure, from cultivator to retail shop to lounge to manufacturer to distro, and what is possible from a destination development point of view to be a job creator and a tax generator for a destination is worthwhile. And then, of course, there's that visitor economy point of view. How many of your retail shops or lounges are actually in tourist centers? Or are you tucking them away in the industrial districts? How are you developing your destination with the visitor economy in mind from hemp and cannabis point of view? Another misconception or detractor is, of course, the inhalation method, right? Because of cigarettes and smoking, there's this point of view that inhalation is negative, and it frankly causes a lot of issues for hotels. It disrupts the experience for those that are around somebody who is inhaling, where people don't like it. So I've noticed that working with hotels and destinations, addressing cannabis inhalation and getting real solutions implemented is really, really important. So that's also one of those, you know, detractors that is very easily addressable by meeting the conversation head on and having quality information for visitors that are looking to imbibe in an inhalation point of view or with an inhalation product. I will point out that most of the cannabis consumption methods today are non-inhalation. Everything from topicals to beverages to edibles to tinctures and transdermal patches, you know, much of the consumption is, and it continues to grow, the mainstream audience, many people are selecting non-inhalation. And also the data shows this. For the visitor audience I mentioned before, many of them prefer non-inhalation methods of consumption. So it's a win-win. At the end of the day, it's all about destinations having good information and taking the lead on directing that visitor traffic and supporting their stakeholders. And then I'd say the third misconception and detractor is that just altering effect of the THC molecule. And the kind of the fear around that, I would say, of people not understanding how cannabis and the altering effects of THC are a very important and also a very complex conversation. Having very small doses of THC or other activated therapeutic compounds that cause this altered state, it's getting more sophisticated, just like craft beer. You can have a non-alcoholic beer, or you can have a 2% daytime beer, or it goes all the way up to more of, you know, a 12-15% beer beverage that has a more intoxication behind it. That whole spectrum of cannabis products across all the different form factors and methods of ingestion are very real. So there's this new kind of choose your own adventure and choose what's right for you. If that visitor wants to consume THC. There's many that just want to consume CBD or CBG or CBN, which supports relaxation and some claim sleep. So there's a lot of different types of products that are also non kind of altering, and making sure we include and speak to this accurately is really important. But the altering effects of that THC is also one of those detractors. And again, that comes with education, fact-based, science-based education around what is cannabis? Why are the effects different? Why do you need to approach it with intention and mindfulness? What is the importance of mindset and setting and really embracing this? Because it isn't like alcohol. And when I read articles and people referencing it like a bar, that is not correct. You know, cannabis has very different effects and it needs to be approached as such.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you kind of breaking down and sort of dissecting each sort of point about cannabis and hemp there. The part that I want to connect it back to, Racine, was why do you feel it was successful to pass it? Because this was done by the citizens. I mean, we see it in a lot of states where they make the argument, you know, by politicians saying we can use this to fund education. Frankly, from talking to you and learning more about Montanans, you know, I could just see you saying, well, we did it because we don't like the government telling us no. So I'm just generally curious, you know, were there arguments made saying, well, if we pass this, we can get X amount of money for, you know, taxes? I'm just curious why you saw it successful in your community.
I think it was a mixture of things. I think it was more of an acceptance, and people are becoming used to marijuana and consumption in all different forms. But also, I think people were getting to the point where they're like, well, it really is no different than alcohol or other forms of things that you can consume to have fun or whatever you want to call it. The other aspect is, and I think it was a real selling point, especially for citizens across Montana, was the fact that you could tax it. And there is a heavy tax. There's a 20% tax on adult use recreational marijuana versus medical marijuana, which is simply a 4% tax. And wow. So there's a significant increase. And of course, they also are able to, they tax it at the state level, and then counties can then vote in another 3% that they solely share between the cities and the counties. And so it was a revenue source for both the state and for the cities and counties. And I think that was a selling point. Actually, I just saw the first year of sales of both medical and adult use came in a little over $300 million. In 2022, which they had originally projected about 120 million. So sales were significantly higher. And of course, the revenues have gone up as well. And we're going into our legislative session and people are looking at that.
I mean, that's a huge figure. I mean, just to talk about merely double what projected revenues were for it. From the sort of tourism and visitor lens, you know, I wanted to ask, have you seen cannabis and hemp change perception of how visitors see your state, your community, and you know how you all reacted to that? I'm assuming you're hopefully getting new visitors to your state because of this being passed, and the ability for people to you know, enjoy cannabis and hemp you know, legally, recreationally in your community.
I can't actually speak to whether or not people view us differently, but I think that people certainly look at us as maybe not meeting that perception of mm-hmm. us being anti this and anti that. We're a little more open-minded than that in many ways. And so hopefully we're kind of breaking down some of those misconceptions.
And I believe I remember you all do not have membership partnership, correct? And I was going to ask, do you have cannabis stakeholders who are part of your realm of responsibility to market, sell, and advertise to the community and visitors and residents alike?
You know, we're both publicly funded through lodging tax, but we also have a partnership, and we have a partnership that's free and a partnership that's dues. But we really don't look at that per se. Mm-hmm. We look at and not just visitation that is heads and beds. We don't really believe in that either. It's all about visitation that promotes you know, new revenue and creating vitality in our communities. So whether you're staying with friends and family or coming in for a big leisure trip with your family or whatever, it really, we don't look at it that way. We just look at a good quality experience, whether you live a few counties over or whether you're from across the country.
Are the sort of cannabis and hemp suppliers, the tourism ones, are they pretty active, I would say, within your realm? You know, are they approaching you, the Bureau, saying, how can we work together, or vice versa?
I would say we're probably more proactive about it than they are. We've got some really, really incredible businesses out there. And there's one in particular that very much embraced this, and they have really diversified their business model. They have venues, concert venues, they have a restaurant. And what they ended up doing was creating a whole other business under their umbrella that is a recreational cannabis business. And so they're diversifying their business model. And what's funny is it wasn't too long after they started doing that, there's a few more businesses in like the restaurants and some of the other ones that are doing the same thing. So I think what it's done is it's not only created growth opportunity for people who are just, that's their only thing. It's mm-hmm. created for business diversification. And that's really interesting and exciting to see.
Yeah. And I wonder, this is a good point I wanted to hand over to you, Brian, because obviously you're located in California. I mean, I would consider California domestically one of the furthest along in terms of the adoption of cannabis hemp and that diversification of industry. I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about how you've seen it implemented and grown and matured in California in terms of Racine's point about diversification of industries there from the tourism and, you know, visitor lens.
Yeah, well, I have seen some of these traditional, like, well-known household brands, you know, specifically, you know, living in wine country, from the wine industry, that have stepped in and, you know, participated in cannabis. And some of these wineries traditionally are now not only award-winning wines and grape growers, they're also award-winning cannabis growers. And that is becoming, I think we'll see more of that as the kind of grape growing and the ag industry starts embracing, I think, cannabis in a bigger way in the years ahead. To that note, one of the exciting things happening in California is the development of the California Cannabis Appellations, just like wine AVAs. They're following the Bordeaux model. And they're also looking closely at the Manuka honey model because cannabis is medicine. So they're looking at a few different kind of Appalachian place of source. And this is really about protecting the brand and the narrative of terroir and the producing regions that create this. So that should be rolling out. I believe farms are going to start getting certified and have official designation as an Appalachian in 2023. That should be a milestone that comes to life. How I've seen it evolve since when I started was really crickets in the room. And then as education, data, case studies, you know, science, biology gets communicated, people start understanding that there's a lot more to this plant than what we've kind of understood in the past 80, 90 years. So, you know, that evolution has unlocked all kinds of amazing things in the supply chain. It's been messy at times, very messy. But as far as the visitor economy, you know, the first kind of steps were tour companies and then CBD massages. And, you know, if you fast forward to today, like I said, this, you know, this 2023 year is going to be fascinating to watch the consumption space. You know, when I think of the visitor economy, you do have those outliers, those manufacturers that double as attractions, kind of like the Coors Brewing Company in Colorado or the Lagunitas Beer Tours plant in Santa Rosa. But when I think of visitor economy, I think of, okay, what is readily accessible for travelers? And that's retail, but taking that experience above and beyond a transaction. And that's a lot of the work I do is to support, you know, cannabis retail shops, lounges, and cannabis stakeholders, and understanding how to be a participant and a stakeholder and look at your business as an attraction and a hospitality experience that fits into a greater brand as part of a greater team that facilitates a visitor experience for a limited amount of time while in the destination, which is very different from a resident experience. That's probably more transactional and price point driven. Yeah. And, you know, I'll just kind of close this rant up with, you know, some of the latest data that I've seen. We did some economic impact studies with some of my clients. One of those visit Greater Palm Springs, and learned that nearly 50% of the retail transactions in the Coachella Valley are visitor transactions. So what does that mean when it comes to hotels? And what are the duties and responsibilities as far as visitor safety, hospitality, and frontline staff preparedness, as well as incremental revenue opportunities with hemp and CBD products and things that have very high sell through, because this is a pop culture trend that we are in the middle of that keeps kind of widening with legalization. But we mustn't forget that, you know, hemp and CBD and a lot of these amazing sustainable capabilities of hemp are all part of the conversation as well.
Absolutely. And so a question for both of you, and I'm going to take your turn, Brian, of spectrum here. I mean, I would consider, you know, California the furthest along of the spectrum here of adoption of it relates to the tourism economy. Surely Montana, not at the beginning stages, several years along now, catching up. But you mentioned three states in the beginning, you know, myself included, in Maryland, that are now going to have recreation cannabis, you know, as part of their societal norms. I wanted to ask, and I'll go with Racine first, what advice would you give for some of those DMOs who are now about to get, you know, hopefully not a crash course in cannabis legislation and what it means to the tourism economy? I wanted to hear what advice would you give or starting points to help some of these DMOs who, you know, are going to see a whole new craft industry that, you know, has not existed in their community ever before?
Great question. And I think I know when we started down this path and we were, and I brought up the idea of, okay, let's really take a proactive approach on the education and the outreach. And some people were like, oh my gosh, if we put that in there, aren't we promoting marijuana use? And I went, no, let's step back from that. What we need to do is remove any bias that we might have for this and strictly look at this from a business perspective. And even when we were writing the copy and looking at it, what's the information that is going to be most useful? But I think that, you know, when you strip down any kind of bias that you have, you know, whether you are a consumer or not, or anything else, it's a legal substance. And just look at how that's going to impact the businesses and make sure that the residents and the visitors are going to remain safe and do things responsibly.
Yeah, good answer. Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Racine's kind of very fact-driven approach where it's like, you know, it's a legal substance. You have licensed businesses. A lot of them paid a lot of money to get those licenses, and they're highly invested in this business, and they're tax-paying, right? So they're part of the community. So really approaching it, I would say if a DMO is considering starting to take proactive steps towards this, a really natural first step is to really understand what is the landscape from an if you care about destination development and evolving as a destination organization above and beyond that marketing tag, understanding the industry and what license types exist and where the bulk of the tax revenue is coming from at different levels for the city, county, and state. And then understanding like where your strengths are in the supply chain and maybe where the opportunity is from that point of view. And then looking at it from a visitor economy assessment of like, how are we set up to accommodate a visitor? Where, what are our cannabis attractions? How do we partner and work with them to create and to help, you know, us evolve toward them and them evolve toward us and include them as part of the future of the stories we tell? And even perhaps not the core center of the brand, but an element of the greater brand, because that's what exists today. So how do you work closely with that visitor economy, understanding for a first step what exists and getting the information around it is a great first step. And I think that's kind of two different SWOT analysis, basically. It's like, what does the destination have from an industry perspective with hemp and cannabis? And then what is there in existence from a visitor economy perspective? And then from there, the next step is to really do a proactive outreach to stakeholders and understand what cannabis stakeholders are excited about being part of the travel landscape and the visitor economy in lockstep and partnership with hotels, attractions, airports, et cetera. And also what current established hotels and travel stakeholders are cannabis interested and hemp interested, and how can you support their evolution with this? And then you'll naturally start to kind of intersect and kind of, I think, build synergy.
Gotcha. Brian, you mentioned a term that I think, and I wanted to parlay to kind of final questions to both of you. You mentioned the term brand and that now you have communities for the first time, cannabis is now going to be part of their brand because of the legalization aspect to it. Question I wanted to ask both of you, and I want to do it from Glacier Country's perspective, and then Brian from you from the International Association's perspective, is how do you see and hope, you know, the opportunities of cannabis and hemp to change or adapt into your existing brand for your community? So I'll go you first, Racine.
Well, we follow the Montana brand, but it's really about charming small towns and communities and, you know, that independent mindedness, the gateway, the natural gateways and natural wonders. So when we look at it in terms of the brand, it's all about every single one of our communities are unique and have their own personality and their own character. I think we just have to keep looking at it from a broad perspective and allow each of our communities to own who that is and what they're going to do and how they're going to present themselves. And for us to help them in terms of how to promote them and how to support them.
Gotcha. And Brian, yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to give three quick examples. So if you look up the Visit Oakland Cannabis Trail, you'll find an attraction that was created that's evergreen. And that's an example of how it really folded in well with the Oakland brand, which is very much about human rights and social equity and had some amazing stories of, you know, pioneers in cannabis and beyond and telling those stories. Another destination that just flipped live a handful of content in a really highly integrated way is San Francisco Travel. And they just launched their new website. You'll see a guide to cannabis lounges, you know, cannabis shopping 101. You know, one of the first steps with San Francisco Travel that I did was really analyze all the guiding brand documents and looked at the positioning statements and the voice and came back with, you know, what is the cannabis puzzle piece to this greater story? And what are some of the pillars of that cannabis story that align with the San Francisco Travel greater brand that is the window to the world when people look at San Francisco? And how does cannabis fit into that? The third destination real quick is Mendocino County, which is, you know, it's one of these legacy, you know, cannabis places in this region called the Emerald Triangle, right below Humboldt, where, you know, this region at one point was supplying 90% of the cannabis to the United States in the underground market prior to legalization. So as a place of source for craft, a really interesting brand there. And cannabis is really taking a wellness tact. They're having a cannabis wellness symposium in next week, where they're having all kinds of speakers and they're talking about locally sourced herbs and fungi. And it's really reflective of that independent, self-reliant, back to the land kind of culture that developed back in the 70s up there, where cannabis used to be a garden herb and it grew into this underground industry and all the craft that wraps around that and the storytelling. And when you think about kind of that prohibition storytelling, think about the bootlegger tunnels in Chicago or in Texas. I mean, it's already there from the alcohol days, the underground, you know, during prohibition. So, and to tie this back into my home, which is Rancho Mirage, Palm Springs, Coachella Valley area, you know, their brand is Find Your Oasis. So looking at 9 different cities, 5 of which have active cannabis licensing, and understanding how each city has a slightly different nuance and has different cannabis businesses and a different kind of bend to it, you know, how does cannabis and hemp and CBD weave into this Find Your Oasis greater Coachella Valley wide brand? And there's some amazing cannabis lounges that are popping up out there, and there's some very innovative events that are happening there, which brings significant economic impact. I would urge that DMOs and destination organizations do not overlook the power and the economic impact of welcoming hemp and cannabis industry events and conferences. It's low-hanging fruit. Just kind of the last brand kind of example, which I am very excited about. It's one of the reasons I moved to the Coachella Valley, is the town of Desert Hot Springs. And they were the first ones in California to license indoor cannabis cultivation. And they have embraced cannabis legalization from day one. And they, you know, they have these amazing healing waters. And the leaders of the desert of Desert Hot Springs really do see the cannabis industry and a cannabis travel experience as part of their kind of flagship brand, very forward facing. So I'm really excited to see what they do. It's going to be based in wellness. It's going to be part of that greater Find Your Oasis story, but it's going to be an incredibly cannabis forward and hemp forward travel experience. And that includes leading with sustainability, as well as innovation and raising their hand for cannabis industry that wants to develop in a place that has an enabling regulatory environment that supports the success of these. They also have amazing hotels that are being redeveloped right now. A lot of these kind of beautiful older hotels are being reimagined, and they're being reimagined being cannabis and hemp inclusive. So I think that intersection of cannabis, hemp, and spa is also going to become part of that future story of Desert Hot Springs. And it's a great base camp to all these trails and Joshua Tree. So, you know, not to beat the drum too hard, but I think Desert Hot Springs in the Coachella Valley has a bright future.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And again, I want to just thank both of you for coming on and sharing your intel, your knowledge base, your experience with this. Wanted to ask if the audience wants to find out more about, you know, get a hold of you, where best place to get your information to find you. So start with you first, Racine.
You can get a hold of me at glaciermt.com, or you can just email me, racine@glaciermt.com. And I would love to talk to people about how they can embrace this or maybe just work it into their overall strategic plan.
And then Brian?
For me, just check me out on LinkedIn or hit me up on LinkedIn. If you search Brian Applegarth on LinkedIn, you should find it. I do have a weekly newsletter that I'm doing now, the Cannabis Travel Weekly. You can subscribe on LinkedIn to that. And the best contact is either my LinkedIn message or preferably my email, which is BA, my initials, Brian Applegarth. So BA at BrianApplegarth.com. That's BrianApplegarth.com.
Wonderful. And so I was doing a small plug. So if you, the audience, want to learn more actually about cannabis and hemp relating to you and the destination organization, we do have a task force of cannabis and hemp under our advocacy committee. So we had one in 2022 for the first time, and it's returning for 23. So if you're interested in learning more, just to hear other topics or have questions you want to raise, both Brian and Racine are on it. Please just contact me, aweisenborn at destinationsinternational.org, and we'd be happy to get you a part of it. So with that, I want to thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, and Brian Applegarth, and Racine Freedy on this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch our latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org, or simply checking out our content throughout the advocacy section on the website, or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.